You are watching CCTV International.
China's head of state Jiang Zemin welcomes Cuban President Fidel Castro to Beijing. The UN's top weapons inspector describes Iraq's new handover of documents as a positive development.
There is one letter in which it tells us that.
China tells the UN to be wary of hurting innocent civilians when imposing sanctions. And the State Council's Taiwan Affairs Office points out an unmet demand in cross-strait direct air links. Hello and welcome. I'm Li Xing in Beijing. Chinese President Jiang Zemin held a grand welcoming ceremony at the Great Hall of the People for Fidel Castro, president of the Cuban Council of State and the Cuban Council of Ministers. The two heads of state held talks on bilateral ties and international and regional issues. Castro arrived in Beijing Wednesday afternoon for a four-day state visit as Jiang Zemin's guest. This is Castro's second visit to China following the first one in 1995. Castro will meet with other Chinese leaders on Thursday. He will also visit Nanjing, capital of East China's Jiangsu province, before leaving for home on Saturday. Cuba is the first country in the Western Hemisphere that established diplomatic relations with China. The two countries have shared friendly relations for 42 years. Chief UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix is examining some 100 documents handed over to him by Iraq. The paperwork supposedly details the disposal of weapons of mass destruction. Iraq's ambassador to the UN says the move shows Baghdad is trying to cooperate with the inspection mission. Meanwhile, intense lobbying continues within the Security Council over the new US-UK draft resolution on Iraq. Feng Li has more details. The new disclosures, which Blix described as positive, came in a series of six letters sent to its UN Monitoring, Verification and Inspection Commission in the past 3 days.
Yes, there are some elements that are positive and which need to be explored further. There is one letter in which they tell us that they have found an R-400 bomb containing liquid in a site which is known to us, at which they did dispose of biological weapons before.
Blix said he has not heard an official response from Iraq about Saddam Hussein denying the UN's request to destroy its Al-Samud-2 missiles. The chief weapons inspector has told Iraq it must start destroying the missiles by March the 1st. Iraq's ambassador to the UN echoed Blix's comments on Saddam's response to Saturday's ultimatum.
For the question of missiles, on the question of missiles, we are waiting the answer from Baghdad. So there is nothing new, really. And thank you very much.
Destruction of the missiles would be a blow to Iraq as it prepares for a possible invasion by U.S. and British forces. Also on Tuesday, the UN Security Council met on a separate matter, and outside the chamber, the 15 countries which currently sit on the Council were busy formulating their positions on new American and French proposals. But Washington says it may not need a new resolution in order to launch an attack on Iraq. Feng Li, CCTV. And the U.S. says it is prepared for war, both at home and abroad. In Washington, top military chiefs had told Congress their forces are ready for battle. And fearing a chemical terror attack, the U.S. government has issued staff at the Pentagon with gas masks. Peter Simpson has more on the readiness for the looming showdown with Saddam.
The prospect of lethal chemical or biological terror strikes has prompted the U.S. government to issue gas masks to all 25,000 staff at the Pentagon, the U.S. military command center in Washington. Fearful of September the 11th starred attacks, which saw hijacked planes crash into important buildings, Bush has ordered a stockpile of 80,000 gas masks, each costing $150. All staff, including cleaners and journalists at the U.S. Military Nerve Center, have been instructed to keep one nearby at all times. if the issuing of gas masks has failed as a stark reminder that war may be just weeks away, then Wednesday's arrival of US military top brass in the capital should serve as such a purpose. The Navy, Army and Air Force chiefs all told Congress their forces are ready for battle. Meanwhile, the US Army General Tommy Franks, who will have overall command of all military forces to be used in any Iraqi invasion, arrived back at his Middle East headquarters in Saudi Arabia. Franks had been in the UK, telling the British government and military chiefs of his war plans, in which UK troops would fall under his command. Peter Simpson, CCTV.
Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein has said he would rather die than leave his own country, dismissing suggestions by US and Arab leaders that he could go into exile to avoid war. During an interview with the US television network CBS, the Iraqi president indicated he would not heed a United Nations demand to destroy Iraq's al-Samam 2 missiles, saying his missiles did not exceed ranges allowed by the United Nations. Saddam also denied any links to Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda terror network. Saddam also indicated that he would not set fire to Iraq's oil fields or destroy its dams in case of a US-led war. German Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer says Germany continues to disagree with the United States and Britain on Iraq. Fischer maintains that every effort should be made to implement Resolution 1441 with the inspectors and without the use of force. He outlined the position in London after his meetings on Tuesday with British Prime Minister Tony Blair and Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. Andrew Brogan has the story.
With the US, Britain and Spain now focusing on a new UN resolution to disarm Iraq, the German foreign minister insisted the existing one was by no means obsolete.
I think it is important to do everything possible to fully implement Resolution 1441. Iraq has to disarm. They have to destroy all their weapons of mass destruction. That's why the inspectors are there. Their job is to enforce the resolution, but we haven't finished with Resolution 1441 yet. That's why there is room for debate as to whether we need a new resolution or not.
After his meeting with Tony Blair, Fischer insisted the relationship between Germany and Britain was excellent, despite the current disagreement over Iraq. Commenting on his government's relationship with the U.S., he said the crisis had made it difficult, but not terrible. Earlier in the day, Fischer met his British counterpart Jack Straw, discussing a range of issues, including Iraq. Fischer's visit comes a day after Britain, the U.S. and Spain tabled a second draft resolution at the U.N., declaring that Iraq had missed its final chance to peacefully disarm. Ender Brogan, CCTV.
Back in Asia, Islamic countries will consider using oil as a means to exert pressure on the West to prevent war on Iraq. That's the message from Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad. Peter Simpson has more details.
Following a hastily arranged meeting of Islamic leaders and ministers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad said Muslim nations might use oil as a leverage to influence U.S. policy on Iraq.
We can work together. There has also been some suggestion that we look at using our oil wealth in order to exert pressure. How this can be done is something else, but there is consensus as to the need for us to think about these things.
Mahathir, who is nearing retirement, also said Islamic countries will work with European nations that oppose the war against Iraq to exert pressure on Washington. The special meeting was hastily arranged by Malaysia to coincide with the end of the Non-Aligned Movement Summit. 47 of the Organization of Islamic Conference's 57 members, including representatives from major oil producers Saudi Arabia and Iran, met after attending the two-day summit. The idea of using oil as a leverage to influence U.S. policy on Iraq has been raised before, but has never achieved consensus among top producers, especially U.S. allies in the Gulf. Peter Simpson, CCTV.
Members of the UN Security Council are meeting to discuss the effectiveness of sanctions against the so-called rogue countries. Wang Yingfan, China's permanent representative to the UN, says China is underlining the need to minimize the unintended impact on civilians and non-targeted states. Ning Jing has this report.
Wang Yingfan urged the UN to further refine its policies governing the use of targeted sanctions. He said sanctions were designed to focus specifically on individuals or other entities that are responsible for threats to and breaches of international peace and stability. Wang said sanctions should not harm innocent populations, nor should they affect international trade relations. He called on the international community to pay more attention to the humanitarian situation of those areas currently subjected to UN sanctions. He said the Chinese government had a three-point proposal overseeing the decision-making process and implementation of sanctions, ensuring that they are compatible with the overall requirements to ease tensions and resolve conflicts. China wants to ensure that the impact on innocent parties should be considered, along with the duration, and an effective monitoring mechanism should be deployed at all times. Ning Jing, CCTV.
Turning away from the Iraq issue, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has condemned planned military exercises by the U.S. and the Republic of Korea. The joint exercises are set to get underway next month. The DPRK's foreign ministry says it is part of a preemptive U.S. attack. Meanwhile, U.S. troops in the ROK have begun 2 weeks of annual anti-chemical military training in the northern city of Yongcheon. The training started on Monday, just after the DPRK claimed a U.S. spy plane intruded into its territory. The accusation followed its test fire of a short-range missile and the inauguration ceremony of ROK President Lee Moo-hyung. The White House says the test is diplomatic extortion designed to force a compromise in the standoff over the DPRK's nuclear program. A delegation from Australia's Labour Party has arrived in China, led by its deputy leader, Jenny Macklin. Macklin is the shadow minister for education and employment in Australia and has been addressing a gathering at Renmin University in Beijing. Her speech stresses China's role in the security and peacekeeping in the Asia-Pacific region. Wang Chonghui has this story.
Using the topic Why China Matters, a speech made by Deputy Labour Leader Jenny Macklin focused on building upon strong political, economic and cultural relationships between China's new leadership and Australia's alternative government. Australia's Labour Party sees China as an emerging global power within the Asia-Pacific region. Macklin also said a visit by her party is timely, given the China's increasing important role in the world's security and economy.
From Australia's point of view, there are two major reasons why China matters. One is because of the insecurity facing the world, particularly in Iraq, but of course also in North Korea. And we understand the critical role that China will play both in the United Nations, but also because of its strong relationships here in our region. We want to have strong relationships with China as it becomes a strong and emerging world power.
Macklin later held talks with Dai Bingguo, the head of the International Department of Central Committee of the Communist Party of China. This was followed in the afternoon by a meeting with department officials. The meeting focused on political and economic cooperation between the two parties in the future. China is now Australia's third largest trading partner after the U.S. and Japan. Trade between the two countries has been growing at an average annual rate of 16% in the past 7 years. The delegation will visit the Ministry of Education, Railways, Science and Technology and West Development Office in the next few days. Wang Chonghui, CCTV.
And coming up after a short break, the State Council's Taiwan Affairs Office says the island's limits and direct air links are hampering travelers. And rescue workers in the Xinjiang city of Kashgar end their search for the missing Monday's violent quake.
In the name of peace, the United States will lead a coalition of the willing to disarm the Iraqi regime.
peace. You want power of the Middle East. We want justice. We want peace.
The charter flight to carry Taiwan business people home during the Spring Festival period is a big step forward towards realizing direct air links, but not enough to cope with increasing cross-strait exchanges. That's the word from Zhang Mingqing, spokesperson for the Taiwan Affairs Office of the State Council. Zhang says the charter flight would have been more convenient without so many restrictions from Taiwan's authorities. The spokesperson says cross-strait ties would improve substantially if the Taiwan authorities were sincere about opening direct transport links and resume the dialogue and consultation on the basis of the 1992 consensus. Rescue and search operations are continuing after Monday's earthquake in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region in northwestern China. 266 people have been confirmed dead. Our reporter Wang Fuzhou is now in Kashgar. He now brings us the latest on the relief and rescue work there.
The headquarters of the Rescue and Disaster Relief at the Chongkochak told the CCTV that the rescue and the search for the missing have basically concluded. As the houses in the countryside are mostly adobe houses made of earth, rescue work here was not as difficult as in the cities where heavy concrete would trap many and take much longer. So the number of the dead will not likely differ much from the present 262 in the coming days. As the disaster areas are in the heavy remote places, the bulk of the relief materials have just arrived 2 days after the earthquake. From what I see here, people are still in a traumatic state after burying the dead. Many are milling around a pile of rubble, which once was their sweet home. Around noon time, a long parade of loaded military trucks has arrived, carrying tents, quilts, and warm clothes, which are badly needed for the victims to spend the winter night. The night temperature here was 2 degrees centigrade, which is considered quite warm at this season. This relatively warm and dry weather will greatly help the relief work here. Wang Feizhou, CCTV, Kashgar.
The China Red Cross Society has collected nearly 2 million yuan, or more than $200,000 in donations for the earthquake-hit Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. The contributions came from Red Cross societies across China, including Hong Kong, Shanghai, Shandong, and Yunnan provinces. The Red Cross from Taiwan has also sent a letter of condolence and donated $100,000. Relief work is underway in Xinjiang. South Korean police have arrested 7 subway employees in a widening investigation into the emergency handling of a subway inferno. The death toll of the arson attack has increased to 182, with hundreds missing. Wei Hong has this story.
The 7 employees were arrested on suspicion of negligence after the suspected arsonist started the blaze. The suspect has been identified by police as a 56-year-old former taxi driver with a history of mental problems. Police are investigating why the death toll is so high and whether more people could have been saved. Emergency officials said 54 people have been confirmed dead, while a total of 128 bodies have been accounted for so far within the charred subway train. More than 300 people were still listed as missing, although some of them may be among the bodies burned beyond recognition. A city government official says Daegu's top subway official has been fired. The alleged arsonist, King Dae-han, will face a charge of manslaughter and could be sentenced to death if found guilty. The subway officials will face charges of negligent manslaughter, which carries a maximum of 5 years in prison. Wei Hong, CCTV.
For stocks news, Asian stocks drifted on Wednesday and the dollar struggled to extend a rebound from a near six-month low against the yen. Shares closed flat in Japan and were slightly weaker in other top Asian markets after a rally on Wall Street failed to persuade nervous investors to dip in. U.S. stocks witnessed a rebound on Tuesday. European major stock markets were still in the negative territory and major indices dipped by 2 to 4% from London to Paris. Now for a closer look at the figures. Still ahead, Chinese researchers announced plans to start their own clinical trials for a possible vaccine for the AIDS virus. And debris from the space shuttle Columbia found in Texas may hold vital clues to the story it crossed the mark.
What color do you see in your eyes? Is it gray, blue, or even red? You may see only one side of the story. CCTV 9 shows you the real China, revealing the whole spectrum of this fascinating country. CCTV 9, your first window on China.
Whenever news breaks, we'll keep a close watch. Worldwide Watch, every night at 7 p.m. Beijing time, only on CCTV International.
Chinese scientists are vowing to continue their quest to find a vaccine for AIDS despite disappointing research results from a US-based company. On Monday, pioneering biotech company Vaxgen announced it had failed in its first attempt to develop a vaccine. But in China, researchers say they're planning to start their own clinical trials later this year. Han Bin has more details.
Vaxgen's announcement hasn't surprised scientists in China. They know how tough a job it is to create an effective vaccine. Part of the problem is the virus' ability to rapidly mutate into a multitude of subtypes and strains. They're suggesting scientists try some different approaches to tackle the virus.
Maybe a single vaccine is not strong enough. We maybe have to use a combination of different vaccine candidate. What if we call scientists a prime boost to use one vaccine as an initial vaccination and then a second one as a boost or even a third one as a reboost?
There are two major ways to develop a vaccine. The more traditional approach is to use the virus in cell culture. That way, it's depleted of its ability to cause disease but can still stimulate an immune response. The second involves gene cloning technology. China is one among many countries searching for a clinical answer to AIDS.
The Chinese scientists have been working parallelly both in the genetic recombinant vaccine, the high-tech vaccine, and also the traditional vaccine. We think we should not block either way, so we have to walk with two legs.
Professor Shao Yimin says that after some 8 years of research, China is close to a clinical trial of its own AIDS vaccine, The team is planning to use a new, untested vector and is hopeful of positive results. The Chinese Drug Administration is considering the team's application, and the clinical test is expected to be carried out within this year.
Experts do believe that the vaccine offers the most successful means of tackling the global epidemic, which has already killed over 20 million people. Although the much-hyped vaccine has turned out to be a major disappointment, they remain hopeful that a successful vaccine will someday stop the deadly virus. Han Bin, CCTV.
A piece of tile from the doomed space shuttle Columbia, recovered in Texas, may be consistent with the kind of hot plasma flow that entered the shuttle through a breach, investigators said on Tuesday. Investigators believe the segment may verify theories that Columbia was damaged about 82 seconds after liftoff on January the 16th, when a piece of orange foam broke away from the shuttle's large external fuel tank and smashed into the shuttle's left wing. Meanwhile, NASA confirmed late on Tuesday that a videotape from inside the Columbia has been found among the shuttle's wreckage. Finally, Indonesia's top hairstylist and makeup artists converged on the nation's capital to show off their talents at an extravagant contest. They'll be competing to see who can create the biggest hairdo and slap on the most colorful makeup. Samantha Kiris takes a close look at the 2003 Mata Tilar Creative Competition.
The first ever Mata Tilar Creative Competition for hair and makeup has been held in Jakarta, with 80 hairstylists and makeup artists competing to be the king of the comb and the queen of the lipstick. Beauty salon professionals from across Indonesia took part in the contest, following earlier preliminary rounds in which 268 contestants snipped and pruned and strapped on the powder in the hope of making the final. Models showed off to stylists elaborate and breathtaking creations. Big hair and carnival-inspired faces ruled the show. The grand prize winner will head to Australia in June to compete in Hair Expo Sydney, as well as bagging about $6,000 worth of prize money. The event was organised by Mata Tilar, head of a respected 33-year-old beauty school based in the nation's capital, Jakarta. Samantha Kiris, CCTV.
And with that brush, we come to the end of this edition of Worldwide Watch. I'm Liu Xing in Beijing. Thank you for joining us.
TV International.
Hello and welcome.